Hello, I'm Rob Parsons, a journalist who writes about the ups and downs of politics in the north of England, from Barnsley to Bamborough and from Morecambe to Middlesbrough. Every day I keep a beady eye on what our mayors, councils and MPs are up to and the big issues that have got the north talking, and I condense it all into an email newsletter called The Northern Agenda that drops into your inbox every weekday around midday. But if you're into politics in any way, you'll know the big event looming over all of it in 2024 is the upcoming general election. Will it be this summer? Maybe October? Maybe even January next year? Frankly, I've got no idea. But I do know that across the north of England, voters will be going to the polls 5 years on from the dramatic 2019 election, where large swathes of our region broke the habit of decades by switching their allegiance from Labour to the Tories, putting Boris Johnson into Downing Street in the process. If the polls are anything to go by, these so-called red wall areas are now set to go back to Labour, plus a few more besides. But polling can only tell us so much, I think, about what's happened in the north in the last 5 years. I want to hear from those northern communities directly, so between now and the election, the Northern Agenda will be going on the road, around the north. We might even venture into the Midlands to find out what's making them tick. My first stop is the seaside resort of Blackpool, where there will soon be an early electoral test for Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak. In just a few weeks, there's going to be a by-election in the Blackpool South constituency after his MP, ex-Conservative Scott Benton, was caught by the Times newspaper offering to lobby ministers and table parliamentary questions on behalf of gambling investors. Mr. Benton was facing a recall petition, with 10% of local voters needing to sign it to force a by-election. This week, though, he belatedly decided to speed up the process by resigning as an MP, meaning there will now be a new vote to replace him. But there's more reason to care about Blackpool than just political intrigue. It tells us a fascinating story about the decline of coastal towns and the challenges facing the so-called levelling up agenda. So come with me as I take the temperature at the country's most popular seaside resort. With its miles of golden sands, pleasure beach and theatres hosting the country's most popular entertainers, Blackpool has, since the late 19th century, been arguably the best place to have fun in the north of England. It's the biggest, brashest and loudest of all the seaside resorts, even to this day. But since its heyday several decades ago, the story has been one of decline, as holidaymakers started taking their breaks abroad, leaving the town with row upon row of unsuitable terraced housing and mounting social problems. All of which means while millions of people descend on Blackpool every year for some fun by the seaside, just a few streets away is some of the country's most dire poverty. In 2019, Blackpool had 8 of the country's 10 most deprived neighbourhoods and 12 of the top 20. People in Blackpool also earn less than in any other local authority area in the country, with an average full-time worker in the town bringing in just £532 a week, nearly £120 less than the North West average. And between 2020 and 2022, Blackpool had a total of 120 drug-related deaths, the highest rate of any local authority in England and Wales. So it is a wet, drizzly Wednesday morning in Blackpool, and I am with Susan Newton from the Lancs Live website. Hi, Susan.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's nice to be joining you here. So tell me about where we are right now.
Well, we're in Cedar Square. It's very, very central in Blackpool. And it's one of those pockets in Blackpool that's been regenerated in the last decade. You know, we've got the comedy carpet on the front as well that's had a lot of money pumped into it, and also more recently the Holiday Inn complex. And this is just one of those areas that's very foodie as well. So
yeah, I can see there's a wood-fired pizza, there's a wine bar, there's trendy chicken shop over there. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, even one of those owners, the chicken shop, specifically said that it's sort of Blackpool's answer to the Manchester Northern Quarter.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I've also spoken to other cafe owners during my work, and you know, they've said that previously this wasn't ever an area where you could come and have a little mosey down, but now you can, and it's become a destination.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are walking from Cedar Square to a less salubrious part of Blackpool. But you've grown up in this area. Just tell me about sort of your experiences of Blackpool during your life and also as a journalist.
Yeah, so I'm sort of from the Far Coast area, so I've always known about Blackpool, had that idea of it. And it is one of those areas where everyone's got a preconceived idea of it, everyone sort of thinks they know it. But when you get to the real underbelly of it, it's a very different area. Growing up, it's always been a place where you can go to Madame Tussauds, the Tower, Pleasure Beach. It's fantastic as a child, specifically. Perhaps a little expensive if you are doing all of those things, particularly during the summer holidays. But growing up, it's always been that sort of area where you go for, you know, friendly people and entertainment.
Yeah, but obviously Blackpool has its challenges, which I'm sure you've reported on as a journalist. I mean, what are the big issues facing Blackpool as far as you can see?
Social housing is a huge one, or should I say lack of social housing. Just chatting to people in the street, even if it's on any topic surrounding Blackpool, we'll always go back to that. I think there's a huge private rental market here. But obviously, you know, people with low social economic backgrounds, that's a real issue. There's also a big issue with houses that are ridden with mould. Again, that's, you know, another issue with the private rental market. So, you know, more social housing, it's crying out for that, really. Antisocial behaviour is another one as well. Recently did a story on that, talking to some business owners. And, you know, there are sections of Blackpool that are sort of overrun with people who take it upon themselves to cause a bit of chaos, smashing windows. There was a number of smashed windows in some of the cafes just where we were. So those are problems I think you'll get in a lot of areas. But because Blackpool's not a huge town centre, it's sort of amplified.
If anywhere is in need of levelling up, to coin the phrase Boris Johnson used to try and win over voters in apparently left behind northern towns at the 2019 general election, it's Blackpool. And the Conservative government says it's done just that, with Levelling Up Secretary Michael Gove just a few days ago using a speech in Leeds to reveal £90 million in new funding to help transform squalid and damp housing in the town's most deprived areas. Last month, MP Scott Benton, speaking in a sparsely attended Commons debate about Blackpool regeneration, said some £400 million in extra investment had come into the town since he was elected. Among other things, this cash has gone on a huge private investment project on the old Blackpool Central train station site, a new multiversity bringing in thousands of students, an upgrade to that most iconic of attractions, the Blackpool Illuminations. But, as Mr. Benton told the Commons, some of the communities in his patch are in the top 0.1% most deprived communities in the entire country, with low life expectancy on a par with sub-Saharan Africa, and skills and education deficiencies higher than anywhere else in Western Europe.
But levelling up is ultimately about changing people's lives, about empowering them to have the educational opportunities, the health outcomes, employment opportunities, which people want to see. And in the case of Blackpool, this comes down to housing, because far too many of our local people are living in housing, which frankly wouldn't have been fit for human beings 100 years ago, and nowadays certainly isn't. And it's a stain on this country that we have housing in the condition it currently is in.
In some deprived areas of the Blackpool South constituency, like Waterloo Road, just a few hundred yards from the frills and excitement of Blackpool Pleasure Beach, life is hard and poverty is widespread. But there are some local businesses offering a lifeline to locals who've fallen on hard times. I went to visit one to see how they're getting on. So, Sarah, tell me about the South Shore Pit Stop Cafe.
Okay, South Shore Pit Stop Cafe is a community cafe. I have an ethos of community spirit. You arrive as a customer, you leave as a friend. We care not just about our local residents, but we also care about our holidaymakers as well. So we're not just for one specific type of customer. What we want to do is build it up to a place where people feel safe, where people can get advice and come and talk, because it's all about expressing what they need and how they can get support.
So it's more than just a cafe, really?
Yes, more than just a cafe. We promote mental health. We promote, we have a pay forward board, which is designed to help anybody, not just the homeless, but anybody at all that would be having a tough day. We promote.
How does the pay it forward board work?
So the pay it forward board is designed, anybody can come in and ask if they can pay for a meal onto the board. We will then put a star on there. It will tell you what meal's available, and anybody can come in and just take that star off and just bring it to the counter. We don't ask questions. We don't ask anybody to prove that they've got no money. What we do ask is, are you okay? Do you need to talk? Is there anywhere we can guide you to? Is there any food banks? Is there anything that you need to talk about? Just to make sure that their mental well-being is okay as well.
And do you get a lot of people using that service?
We do. We get a lot of people using the service. More than I thought we would, and a lot of our payments onto the board are from general members of the public, so we do get a lot of people using it.
So you're clearly an important part of the community of Waterloo Road. Like, tell me a bit about this area. Like, what's the area like?
Okay, so as a business, I actually only bought the lease in July 23, so during season. Not sure how we would survive winter, because obviously we do rely on tourists to keep the money coming through. However, because of the ethos of what we do, I think I've done the heart of the community, because we do have a lot of our local support coming in. Waterloo Road in particular is not what it used to be. Bond Street is not what it used to be. I've not lived in Blackpool all my life, but I've been here 14 years. And I've seen it deteriorate massively.
In what way?
High crime, buildings becoming very depleted, very run down, drugs, alcohol. They're the main things. However, the increase of possible rents on shops and the increase in council taxes are preventing businesses from trying to open and flourish, to bring us back to make us thrive.
So what needs to happen for areas like Waterloo Road to thrive?
We need for it to be cleaned up. We need the community to pull together, but we also need the councils and the government to listen and not just spend money in one area. Spread it across the entirety of Blackpool, not just one specific area. As an example, we've got a building directly opposite which has been empty for years that could be used at great use. There's the old Hearts building, which is falling apart. Yes, there's been final finishing put in. However, is that going to be rejected? Is it going to actually turn it around? People, holidaymakers will not come around here when they're looking at the rundown buildings. They want to be somewhere nice and pretty, and Waterloo Road and Bond Street doesn't show nice and pretty.
So, you, in the last few years in Blackpool, there's obviously been a Conservative government, you've got a Conservative MP, or you have in the last few years, and they talk about levelling up and the tens of million pounds that's going in to Blackpool and areas like Waterloo Road to make it better. Do you feel like you've noticed any change because of that?
Okay, I actually think that Scott Benton has done an awful lot in the area. He's made a mistake. There's things that have happened that maybe shouldn't have happened, but he has done an awful lot in this area and been very visual so people can see him. I've actually had Diane Mitchell, who's a councillor. I've had Simon Cartmell, who's a councillor. I've had Scott Benton, all in the cafe, all at the same time. I didn't have Simon, actually. I had Diane and Scott in, but I've also had Diane and Simon in together, and we've done drop-in surgeries in the cafe for our local community to see what needs to be done to help, what can we do about crime and how can we sort it out.
So you might vote for him again if there is a by-election and he stands?
I don't want a by-election. I think it's, to be fair, we're going to get a general election, so what is the point in having a by-election? It's more funds being spent. when them funds need to be used elsewhere, why use them that £300,000 when we're going to have a general election?
I'm with one of Sarah's customers, Adam, at the South Shore Pit Stop Cafe. Adam, tell me about yourself.
I mean, recently I came back to Blackpool. I have come from a professional career, experienced personal trauma, and now I'm at the opposite side of where I was. I'm a food bank recipient. I live on the road with the single lowest male health life expectancy in the country, in an area where we're almost 31% of child food poverty. It's enabled me to really get back to my basics on my personal values, and really the likes of Sarah, Pit Stop Cafe, and so many different places are the embodiment of Blackpool, which is the hope, really. You know, we're in one of the worst positions at one of the worst possible times that the country can face, and you've got people like Sarah, who may not have been from Blackpool locally, but she's as sangrown as I am, that are bringing a little bit of hope to what we do. I mean, who would want to operate a financial business and then have the likes of the Pay It Forward board that's there, that's done in such a respectful and courteous manner? And what it's taken me from is, I'm a food bank recipient now. It's driven me forward to see somebody that stands alone and that is the cheerleader, you know, that's prepared to put themselves out and be known and make themselves known as different and continue to bring hope to what we've got, which is, for many people, a hopeless situation, is amazing. It makes me want to do more. It's, you know, I'm looking at CIC now. I want to be either in full-time work, creating value in the community that I love and that I'm part of, or I want to have a CIC, a business, a charity, whatever it is. And it's the scrappiness. Blackpool's got a scrappiness that isn't matched elsewhere. It just isn't. The fact that many of us see that we've got nothing, but we're doing exactly what we can. You know, a business like this that took over 12, 14 months ago, whatever it may be, that's continually doing as much as they can, continually taking risks, continually taking chances, continually opening the doors for other people. She might be selling sausage and bacon, but it's really that's what their cafe is about, is sausage and bacon. But to call them a cafe would be a disgrace, really. And to see what's going to happen with whoever represents us when it comes to either the local council or the House and Commons is super important, because what I believe that whoever they represent and whatever they do, what they really have to do is to empower people like Sarah, empower people like me that have got a different way of approaching a problem that central and local government can't do. It's an empowerment of people that can be agile, that can take risks. You know, the things that we have planned that we'd love to do in the community are risky. You know, some of the things that I'd like to do would lose people jobs in local and national government. They really would. But as a private individual or a private business, I've got a huge amount that I'm able to do and take the risk that won't cost me my job, won't cost me my livelihood. And I just want to see more of it. I want to see more Sarahs. I want to see more Pit Stops.
Despite its deep-seated social problems, Blackpool is the undisputed seaside home of showbiz glamour. Just ask the cast of Strictly Come Dancing, who make their annual pilgrimage to perform at its Tower Ballroom. And now a new £13 million museum called Showtown has opened to put a spotlight on the town's glory days of entertainment, featuring items like a vintage sooty puppet and Stan Laurel's hat. I went to take a look at how it's getting on. So I am at the fantastic Showtown Museum in Blackpool with the Chief Executive, Elizabeth Moss. Tell me how this project came to be in the first place.
Well, it's been at least 10 years in the making, 150 years worth of history that we're celebrating here. But it's been a creation of collaboration between storytellers, performers, those that have been involved in the entertainment business, in circus, in dance, and those that are involved in the development of the seaside resort, all telling their stories as a great collective and being shared with colleagues here at the Showtown Museum, and then worked on with fabulous museum designers who have reimagined the way that museums work to create something really quite sensational for Blackpool.
And you've lived in this area for quite a while, haven't you? I mean, what does it, the showbiz legacy of Blackpool, what does that mean to you personally?
Well, it means something different to everybody, of course. And to me personally, as I walk through Showtown, I'm picking up elements of nostalgia. It reminds me of time spent with my grandparents and my parents. But it also brings it right up to date in terms of how my children are growing up in the area. So, there's artifacts in there that relate to Sooty and Sweep and Orville, which were my generation. But there are things to do for younger people as well. So it really reflects entertainment through the years, with Strictly Come Dancing being some of the most modern, taking it back to Northern Soul, which is still highly celebrated within Blackpool, to elements of circus, which is alive every day in Blackpool in terms of the Tower Circus. So there are memories for me that will be shared with others, but there really is something for everybody in terms of stimulating historic thoughts, but also going out and still enjoying today.
Now, when we got here, there was a queue out the door to get in and see the attractions. I mean, how are people reacting to it in the few days that it's been open so far?
Well, I genuinely have to say I have never seen so many smiling faces in my life. The reaction, the response so far has been absolutely phenomenal. People coming through the doors, not necessarily knowing what to expect, but then coming out and just being enthralled by what they've seen within. It's a real place of fun. It's a real place of celebration. And I think it really puts a spotlight back on Blackpool in terms of that pride and proudness that local people have of the area.
And what are some of the highlights that people won't want to miss?
Well, there are so many to mention, but I think when you first come into the gallery spaces, you're arriving at the seaside and you encounter a huge 17-metre screen that tells the stories of the development of Blackpool. And you can have your photograph taken as soon as you arrive, and then you will appear on this screen as if by magic. So people have really been enjoying seeing themselves on the seaside. And then walking through, there are highlights within the Roll Up Gallery. So that's our celebration of circus. We've got a combination of original costumes that are on display with audiovisual activities from Mookie and Mr. Boo from the Tower Circus. You've got Norman Barrett, the ringmaster, who is reliving his 25 years worth at the circus. And so the story goes on. Highlights in terms of the Illuminations Gallery, telling the history from the arc lamp in Blackpool, but taking you right up to modern day. And in there, you can be a modern day designer of the Illuminations as well and send your design onto the prom, which is really being well celebrated by different visitors.
Now, we know Blackpool has its problems, they're well documented, but there's a lot of regeneration work going on. How does Showtown fit in with the wider regeneration of Blackpool?
Yeah, you're right to say that. There is a lot going on at the moment. We've got a new cinema that's opening at the end of this week. But for us at Showtown, this has been a £13 million investment, and that investment has come hugely from central government funds, a pooling of funds from the National Lottery Heritage Funds as well, and also from local contributors and grant providers. So that's a capital investment into the town. But what we're expecting is for revenue into the town to rise by about £15 million a year because of Showtown. So the additional people it's bringing in, the additional length of stay that it's giving as well, money out to those related businesses in the area. So it is transformational, but it's one of the pillars that is helping Blackpool redevelop at the moment. And so the programme goes on. There's a lot of work that's happening in Blackpool, whether that be through business and office development or continuing with our long-lasting legacy of entertainment, but there's a real catalyst at the moment.
I mean, this museum is really wonderful. I've been looking around at all the fantastic stuff in there. It just occurs to me that a large part of Blackpool and what it's about is about reflecting on its glorious past. I mean, is there a risk of too much of a focus on how Blackpool used to be and not enough thinking about how it could be in the future, do you think?
I disagree with that, to be honest. It is a museum, so it is based around museum principles and displaying collections and collecting those stories and presenting those. But actually what museums are fabulous at doing is galvanising people together, finding a common purpose, making sure that people are in live conversation today. It helps with mental health benefits. It helps with relieving loneliness. It brings people together in a celebratory manner. And with the programmes of activities that we have engaged in so far, but will roll out further now that we've opened Showtown, will include things like Show Tots, so bringing youngsters together with new family members and being able to enjoy the environment and just kind of let off steam and really enjoy life, which all helps towards well-being. But we also support the performers network, so those performers that are no longer kind of in the entertainment scene, but it gives them a place to be able to come together and enjoy the fruits of their labour, to talk really positively about how they've contributed to the town. And so it goes on. So museums are a great place to bring people together, to allow people to think a little bit deeper, to laugh, to play, and actually genuinely helps with well-being. So it really does help us move forward as well.
And we're still pretty much in the off season, so I guess when the summer full season comes around, I mean, it's going to be absolutely rammed in here, isn't it?
Well, we hope it's going to be a controlled, rammed environment. So we do operate a time ticket. So we do encourage people to book in advance so that we can control numbers and people aren't disappointed by doing that. But yeah, Blackpool last year experienced 20 million visits. It's a really, you know, significant driver to our economy in Blackpool, the visitor economy. So yes, if Showtown can encourage a share of that to come through, we should have a fabulous first season.
So I'm in Blackpool Town Centre now, outside the Hounds Hill Shopping Centre, and I really want to know what people living in Blackpool think about what it's like here, what are the challenges, what are the things they're looking forward to, but I also want to know what they think about the people representing them or hoping to represent them in Parliament in the near future. I've got a picture here of Scott Benton, the current MP for Blackpool South. Also this one of Chris Webb, who is a Labour candidate hoping to replace him. Do people know who either of these two politicians are? Let's find out.
Blackpool is an emerging town. I mean, I don't know Blackpool very well because I'm from Cumberland, but we've also lived abroad. But in the short space of time we've been here, we've been quite heightened, actually, by the way they're tackling the problems. And it has got problems, there's no question about it. And I do say that the selection of MPs that we have at the moment are tackling this in a robust and also human manner. So, you know, I applaud what they're doing, and I think people should support them.
So when you say the tackling the problems, what do you think the problems are in Blackpool?
Well, the problems has been underfunding in transport, in development. A lot of the areas of Blackpool have been allowed to run down without any seeming encouragement to do something about it, and they're tackling it, and that's got to be good. And there's been grant money, and there's been encouragement.
So do you feel optimistic about the future of Blackpool?
Yes, I do. I think with the right sort of continued encouragement and people giving it time, because it's not like turning a tap on and off. There's got to be a planning stage, there's got to be a thinking stage, and as a development exercise, it's good. It's good.
And can I ask you, do you know who this chap is?
Yes, I do.
What's his name?
Well, it's a good question. I can't think of his name at the moment, but I know exactly who he is. And this guy, it might be part of a by-election, and that'll be seriously wrong. It's a total waste of public money.
Oh, so you think there shouldn't be an election?
Absolutely not. There could be a general election. Why spend £300,000... to have an election when there's going to be one in a few months.
So this is Scott Benton, the current MP for Blackpool.
That's
his
name.
Yep.
Let me ask you.
Do you know who this chap is?
Haven't got a clue.
Well, he's the Labour candidate.
Yes, I didn't like his tie.
Well, just the colour you don't like.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So if there were a by-election here, who would you be voting for?
I should vote for Scott Benton.
Well, I've been here 5.5 years. I lived around the country, divorced with a second wife. I would say, can I make a comparison? Sure. Bradford. Blackpool is a hell of a lot better than Bradford. Bradford was a damn good place when I was growing up, but it's a dump now. Anyway, as regards the MPs, yeah, I know.
So you know who this is, do you?
Yes, Ben. Benton by name, the guy is totally Ben. It got caught in that sting.
I would say that he denies, obviously, any wrongdoing.
MP.
So do you think there should be a by-election to replace him?
Definitely.
And?
Yeah, I know Chris.
And what do you think of this chap?
He'll be a good guy. I know him. I've had dealings with him. Chris Webb will be a damn good MP. He's a socialist, he's left-wing. Not like Stam.
What's it like living in Blackpool? Do you like it?
To be honest, it's run down. Need more things to be done up. Obviously, we've got a few places around, but to be honest, it's just a joke. Like, you've got people on the street sitting there begging. It's just a run-down place, to be honest.
And how long have you lived in Blackpool for?
18 years now.
And has it got better, worse over that period?
I'd say it's just getting worse and worse and worse. You've got violence, non-stop knife crimes with kids and stuff like that. It's a joke.
And what would you like to see that would make it better, do you think?
I think, honestly, just a few more places to open up. Like, to go and do more things. There's not much here you can go and do. You've got the amusement parks or fish and chip shops. Other than that, there's not really anything around.
Can I ask you this, sir? Do you know who this guy is?
I actually don't have a clue, no.
So he is the MP for Blackpool South, Scott Benton, but he possibly, he might not be for much longer, because he's suspended from Parliament for lobbying for the gambling industry, and there might be a by-election to kick him out, potentially. I mean, do you follow politics much? Do you have much faith in politicians to make Blackpool better?
Not really, no. I don't see it getting any better. I see it just getting worse, to be honest. If you look around, there's not really much places you can go to. To be honest, I'm getting a bit on edge now, yeah.
This is... Do you know who this guy is?
Oh, again, he's
a Labour candidate.
Right, okay.
To be the MP. I mean, would you, if there was a by-election, would you vote in it?
Of course I would, yeah.
And which way do you think you would vote?
I'd probably push him out.
Yeah.
Because obviously he's not doing much to support our local community. I see everything's just run down.
Yeah.
So in the last few days before he resigned as an MP, triggering the by-election, I've approached Scott Benton's office to see if he would speak to me for an interview, but he refused, saying he'd been covered unfairly in the past by the local Reach News website. And nobody from the local Conservatives had been willing to speak to me either. One councillor I spoke to insisted the party had a good story to tell about levelling up in Blackpool, but refused to be interviewed about anything to do with Scott Benton or the by-election. As we recorded this, the Conservatives did not currently have a candidate for this by-election, and they're likely to face competition in the seat from a resurgent Reform UK, the populist right-wing party set up by Nigel Farage, who this week, with the help of new MP Lee Anderson, will be unveiling their Blackpool South candidate. But one politician who is willing to speak to me is Chris Webb, the Labour candidate for the Blackpool South seat. He's a local man who grew up in the resort and is chair of the Board of Trustees for a local charity, but he's also had significant experience in frontline politics, including as the head of office for the late Rochdale MP, Sir Tony Lloyd. So, Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Are you already in full campaigning mode with your Labour team in Blackpool South?
We've been campaigning non-stop since I was selected just over a year ago. So last year we spoke to 15,000 residents across the constituency, and we're out day in, day out across Blackpool, all in 2024, speaking to hundreds of residents a day, listening to their concerns and letting them know about my priorities for Blackpool South.
And talking of your priorities, we've been hearing on this podcast already about some of the issues affecting Blackpool South, you know, in terms of very high levels of deprivation and the challenges that are well documented. What are the big concerns of voters that you speak to?
The number one issue that comes on the door day in, day out is crime. Blackpool has the highest crime in Lancashire. It's gone up. People aren't seeing bobbies on the beat as they did when I was growing up here 20, 30 years ago. They're not seeing them come out when they've been victims of crime. And that's a big concern to them. And so one of the main things they've asked me, that if I am fortunate to be the next Member of Parliament for Blackpool South, is to have crime and tackling crime as one of my top priorities as the Member of Parliament.
And obviously, you were going into this with Labour having a huge lead in the polls and an incumbent MP who faces being kicked out by the electorate. With all that in mind, what is Labour's pitch to the people of Blackpool going to be? Is it as simple as, let's get rid of the Conservatives, or do you have a positive message for what Labour can actually deliver for places like Blackpool?
Blackpool has huge potential, and over the last 14 years, it's been set back by this government. You know, council says to me they've lost over £1.6 billion since 2010-11. And they just can't deliver the services they once did. We haven't had the levels of investment that the town really needs. And that's why I put my name forward, because I believe it needs a local voice, someone who's Blackpool born and bred, champion local people, who lives here with their family, who knows the issues because I see them day in, day out. And that's why we're putting forward a positive message for Blackpool and the potential of Blackpool. We know we've got severe issues across the town with health inequality, with crime, with education, but we've also got the solutions. And all we've asked for as local residents is to be given that power, to be given that resource, and we can work on these as a local town to help not just people living here now, but future generations to come.
Because obviously, the Conservative government, as Scott Benson has frequently pointed out before he lost the whip, has put significant levelling up funding into Blackpool for various projects like the Multiversity, new housing stock, a major private regeneration project. And I know Conservatives locally say they feel like they have a good story to tell about what they've done for Blackpool in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, how do you counter that as a Labour candidate?
Well, one thing is clear is that these extra projects and resources have been championed and spearheaded by the local Labour Council. Scott Benson's very good at coming in when it goes well, but then keeping it at arm's length when a bid isn't successful. And we've seen that time and time again. These projects are part of a long-term plan by the Labour Council and local Labour politicians and previous MPs, and hopefully myself as a future MP. This is all part of a larger plan to grow Blackpool by 2030. And yes, any investment is welcome. But the problem we've seen and the problem I get from residents is that unfortunately a lot of these initiatives have been town centre focused. There hasn't been that much for local residents, local council taxpayers. And that's what we've been asking for. We've been trying to regenerate South Shore. It's where the charity that I lead is Chair of Trustees. We've transformed an old pawnbroker's just from the Pit Stop Cafe where you were. And we've transferred that to a community hub supporting people with mental health issues. But we can't do it alone. We need that resource, and it can't just always be the town centre. And that's something that I've pledged to local residents, something I'll be pushing, is that we need investments in the residential areas. We need investments in the South Shore, Blackpool, because it's been forgotten about far too long. And it's great for Michael Gove and them to come and have the photo shoots in the high-vis and the building hats in the town centre, but come and see the local residents. And that's why I was fortunate when Keir Starmer came to visit Blackpool pretty much this time last year. We went to South Shore. I showed him the problems that we have on the Waterloo and Bond Street areas. And that's why every Labour politician that has come to see me in Blackpool, I have taken that. I've shown them firsthand so they understand the issues that we face as a town.
And more widely, obviously, in this podcast, we've been to a museum dedicated to Blackpool's glorious showbiz past. But looking to its future, do you feel optimistic that Blackpool can put its current challenges behind it?
I do. The residents here have a fighting spirit. They always have. And Blackpool has adapted over the decades, and it's always modernised. And we see that with record numbers of visitors. We've got 20 million visitors in the last year that have come to Blackpool. That is a huge endorsement of what we're doing, but what the potential that Blackpool has going forward. And that's something that I'll be championing to try and get that, not just public money, but private money into invest into Blackpool. We can shape into a resort where we're winning the awards every year for the best budget value holiday. We've got a hotel that was awarded one of the best in Europe in the Boulevard by the Pleasure Beach. We have these staples. We've got the new conference centre. We are booming, but we just need a little more help from government, but we also need the powers and the funding to choose our own destiny and given that result. And that's why I'm, you know, optimistic for our future, especially under a Labour government, because one thing Keir has been clear about is about devolving power from the centre out to the communities. And we've seen how much that can be a success in Greater Manchester and in Merseyside and Leeds, where we've had fantastic mayors doing that. And devolution can give us that projection into a great future for Blackpool.
Despite the tens of millions of pounds in government cash going in to regenerate Blackpool, it's still the Labour-run Blackpool Council responsible for making things happen on the ground. And when I went to chat with their leader, Lynn Williams, at their HQ in the newly redeveloped area around the town's main railway station, it was clear she has big plans for the town's future.
So
So I am at Blackpool Council's headquarters, a stone's throw from the railway station. There's a lot going on in the area around the council headquarters. There's thousands of civil servants moving into a building next door. There's a multiversity springing up right behind us. I'm with Councillor Lynn Williams, the leader of Blackpool Council. Councillor Williams, we hear quite a lot about Blackpool being at the wrong end of league tables for things like life expectancy and, you know, drugs deaths and things like that. As council leader, you're obviously very proud of Blackpool. Is it quite painful for the town to be, in many people's eyes, sort of have so many problems?
Oh, obviously, we have challenges in Blackpool and, you know, leader of the council, but, you know, this is my hometown, you know, and the council's priority, all of the regeneration work is you know, is for our people, is about creating better jobs and opportunities and housing. We know that a lot of those health inequalities, addiction, domestic abuse, poor educational attainment is linked with poor housing. And that has been our absolute obsession over the last 10 years, which resulted, we're really pleased to say, you know, in the announcement the Secretary of State made at the Convention of the North of 90 million. Most importantly, that I think that's a recognition from central government that, you know, they're going to work with us to resolve this issue, because, you know, it is so important. And, you know, all the other work around public health, you know, we're doing some amazing stuff to work with our people and to improve those health inequalities, you know, because that's absolutely this council's priority.
So you'd agree with Scott Benton when he says that a lot of Blackpool's problems do come down to its housing stock?
I very rarely agree with Mr. Benton, but, you know, this has been, you know, Blackpool Council has been working on this, the housing obsession, for a lot longer than Mr. Benton has been in town. You know, this has been a journey for over 10 years, because a lot of the misery, and it is misery for our families and, you know, our residents who are living in that poor quality accommodation. And that is, you know, is funded from public funds. It's public housing benefit. And all that the council can do is to pay it out. We have no other control over that. Then that's another ongoing discussion that we have with government. But yes, we have. You know, it is fundamental to the regeneration of this town. It is housing.
So the £90 million that Michael Gove has announced for regenerating the housing stock in Blackpool, how big a deal will that be for the town? Like, how much can you achieve with what he has promised?
It's fundamental, and it's more obviously the 90 million, fantastic and very welcome to have, but it's more about that relationship now that we have with Homes England. Because, you know, if you go to the top of the tower, and you can see how dense our housing is. So, you know, it's about having a different relationship with Homes England, who understand that, you know, we need to, you know, renovate and repair, and, you know, we don't have green land, brownfield to you know, extend and build houses on. So it's a case of how we work and how we alter that housing. So, you know, 8 years ago, the council borrowed money and set up a wholly owned council company, Blackpool Housing Company. So over the last 7 and a bit years, we've been buying up, you know, hostels, HMOs, and converting them to good quality accommodation. And that is now over 700 homes have been created. So, and we know that it works. We know that that has an immediate impact on communities. But we need to do that a lot quicker and on a much bigger scale. And that relationship with government and the 90 million over the next 5 or 6 years will help that. As importantly, I think it breeds confidence for in terms of the private sector. Because as is, you know, we need to, you know, triple that money. You know, 90 million, as wonderful as it is, isn't going to be sufficient to do what we need to do across the town. So it's about, you know, having that confidence, establishing that, and relationships with the private sector for investment, and also for housing associations to come on board and be a partner. So, you know, it is phenomenally important, and it's, as I say, it's something we've been working to for a long time.
Whenever I'm talking to political leaders in the north, I hear about how the swingeing budget cuts that local authorities like yours have had to endure in the last 10, 15 years. And, you know, so many of them are struggling to fulfil their basic services as functions. I mean, how much can a council like yours do given those funding constraints? Are you reliant on having to work with other organisations like central government to achieve the aims that you want?
Well, I mean, we, you know, 80% of Blackpool's budget is on statutory services. So, you know, you've got sort of about 16% non-discretionary spend. So you're looking at all of those stuff, the preventative stuff that you would want to do more of when you talk around sort of, you know, health issues. You know, we've been phenomenally successful, you know, working with government in terms of applications, but it's a bidding round that shouldn't happen. And I think there's an unfair advantage, you know, for the South, because there's more economic, it's easier to show economic outcomes in terms of the value of land, et cetera. So, and, you know, that all those details that are in the Green Book. So, you know, whilst we've done really well with that, with the applications and funding bids and you know, levelling up, which is bids round one and two, you know, that shouldn't be how essential services or how local government should be funded. It shouldn't be one-year settlement. We should have multi-year settlement that enables us to plan. You wouldn't run a business this way. But we, you know, in Blackpool, I'm very proud that we've been able to continue to set a budget. We're continuing to deliver, you know, without those cuts to services, without people losing their jobs, and prioritising and delivering for the most vulnerable. You know, and that's what we will continue to do. But also, you know, continue to be very loud and clear that local government, local services, public services need to be better funded.
Now, I think Conservatives, if and when there is a by-election or a general election, will talk about the tens, if not hundreds of millions of pounds, they say, has been pumped into Blackpool in levelling up funding since 2019 when the Conservatives got into power. I mean, do you think they deserve any credit for the changes that have happened here in the last 5 years?
We did at a request, actually, from a Conservative councillor, and we did a piece of work around that showed that for 11 years after the Conservative government came into force, we actually got less in terms of grant funding than we had, you know, in terms of applications for funding than we had in the previous 11 years. And that was in addition to, obviously, our core funding being reduced. And obviously, we work with government. You know, in this very room, I've sat across from the Secretary of State. You know, and he's, you know, this 90 million is about, you know, supporting our plans, so the Labour administration plans and our vision for the town. And we have to, you know, work with government and be pragmatic, because my duty is absolutely to deliver for the people of the town. So, absolutely, we'll work with government. So, you know, But there is absolutely no question. It is in terms of the officers here at the council who have been, you know, have absolutely led on those relationships and ensured that we get over the line with this, with the housing announcement from the Secretary of State.
Now, I know there are a lot of people in Blackpool who really care about the future of the town. We've been speaking to them today. For those people who want a optimistic, vibrant future for Blackpool, what examples of things going on in the town can you give them to give them some confidence that Blackpool is moving in the right direction?
I think, you know, for the town centre, you know, that is, you know, to establish having those all those jobs, it's about businesses and, you know, the all round, because 22,000 people, you know, in our town are reliant on hospitality and tourism industry. It's a massive, you know, employer, you know, into for people being able to pay their rent and pay their mortgage. What this opportunity of this, the Levelling Up partnership does, will enable us, and the part of the small part of the 90 million will be to set up master plans for the north and the south of the town, you know, to work, have consultations and understand how people want to live in those areas, and, you know, ensure that we get it right, because we have to listen to, you know, the residents. They have to have a very clear, you know, impact on those plans that how we develop across the town. So, you know, there's lots of stuff coming. We've got the new IMAX cinema, but you know, opening within the town centre, that vibrancy of the town centre. You know, there's lots going on. And you know, you went to Showtown, which is free for all our residents and our schools. You know, we're really proud of that, and yeah, I hope that, you know, the residents will appreciate and enjoy all of that, and also be probably engaged, you know, when we come around to do the consultation about the master plan for their area.
Thank you for listening to the Northern Agenda podcast. And don't forget, you can subscribe to our daily newsletter at thenorthernagenda.co.uk. It's more important than ever for Northern voices to be heard. The Northern Agenda is a laudable production for Reach. It's presented by me, Rob Parsons, and it's produced by Daniel J. McCoughlin. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to The Northern Agenda wherever you listen to your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. See you next week.